Hello, KFM listeners. Welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs with me, Rick Castellini, and...
I'm Adam Cochran.
And we are at Talking Digital and at Help Me Rick on Twitter. You can call us at 241-8801. The area code's 970-241-8801, extension 1. If you have a question about anything technology related, this is our pre-Christmas slash holiday slash New Year's show, last one of 2010. So it's your opportunity to call in and ask about anything technology related, and we will get you on the air and answer those questions.
Yeah, if you want it done live, this is your only chance. I think tomorrow as we record our podcast, we'll probably answer a few holiday gift-giving questions and things like that.
But, an email.
But if you want to talk nothing to live. Us, yeah, nothing live. So if you want to talk to us live, this is your chance. And
now is the time.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Tweet us at Help Me Rick or at Talking Digital or call us 241-8801 extension 1. And remember, you can listen to us anywhere on the planet by going to kafmradio.org and listen to the live stream. If you don't get the signal very strongly, even here in the valley, tune in on the web. And speaking of strong signal here in the valley, KFM is in the midst of a new fundraising campaign to try to boost the power of the KFM signal. So if you have the means and the desire, donate to the KFM Boosting the Signal Fund. I don't know what the official name is, but they are boosting the signal.
It is a booster fund. There we go. Hello, you're on KFM with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
How you guys doing? I've got a real neophyte question here. I've got a regular desktop computer that crashed, and I saved the hard drive, but I've got a feeling that I'm going to get a Christmas present with an Apple computer, a laptop.
Ooh.
Am I going to be able to take that external hard drive and hook it up to that Apple?
Yes.
Okay, great.
You will need some equipment, though, to do that.
Say what again, please?
You will need some equipment to do that, though. You'll need...
Okay. No, it's an external hard drive or an internal hard drive?
No, internal.
External hard drive.
Oh,
it's
is an external. External.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've already
got it in the box, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera. And I just didn't know if that would... cross over or create problems.
Will.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you won't have any problems at all. There are problems with, occasionally, you can corrupt a disk by moving it back and forth between a Mac without ejecting it the way you're supposed to, but as far as just moving it off the PC and plugging it into the Mac, it should plug right in.
Yeah, and it'll see all the data there.
Be able to pull up the whatever information I need without creating an issue.
Yeah.
You can pull up your data. You cannot run programs, as you probably already know.
Well, that I didn't know.
No, you can't plug in a hard drive and you know, even from another computer into even PC to PC, you can't plug in a hard drive and automatically run the programs. Programs have to be installed.
I didn't think so, but I wanted to find out from the guys that know.
Yep.
No, it's a good concern. And the other thing, too, that you might run into that I'll just give you a heads up on, if you had password protected your account in your previous version of Windows, you might have to have somebody come in there and hack it a little bit to get past those password-protected folders. Hopefully
no,
that's not the case.
That.
Yeah, if there wasn't any passwords, you should be fine.
I just have standard spyware and that kind of stuff.
Okay, good.
You should be good.
That shouldn't create a problem.
So do you think you're going to get an Apple laptop or a desktop?
I think it's going to be a laptop.
Nice.
Good.
You'll like it. You will very much like it.
All right, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Enjoy your show. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
That's the way it works, 241-8801, or again, you can tweet us at Help Me Rick or at Talking Digital, and we'll read your tweets and questions on the air and answer those questions as we go along here today. Well, Adam, it's been about a week since we saw each other. What's new out in the computer world that you found this week?
Well, you know,
anything?
That's a good question.
Anything?
There's been more Google hack, or more, not Google, more Connect hacks.
More
exciting.
Been more, huh?
There's always lots of those. I'm just watching the news, seeing, apparently there's some site called WikiLeaks that's still having some problems.
But, oh, really?
Yeah, let's answer the phone. Hello, you're on with Rick and Adam answering computer questions. What can we do for you?
Oh, I always love you guys' show.
Thank you.
But I have a question about
you might need to turn down your radio if you have a radio on there.
Yeah, we're hearing
a real sleek device, but I hear that when you surf, it doesn't. A lot of the websites use a specific something that you can't see from the iPad.
Yeah, you're talking about an iPad. Is that right?
An iPad. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the you won't be able to see any Flash-based websites, and there's a few other extension or a few other
technologies like
ActiveX plugins and things like that that don't work very well with the Apple or with the iPad. But it's not a major handicap, but it will be something noticeable on certain sites.
Huh? And why is Apple have a thing going with Mozilla or what's Adobe? I guess it is.
Yeah, it's Adobe.
What's the basis behind that?
The two things. One is memory usage, and two is battery power. Flash is a very intensive, requires a lot of processing power, and because it requires a lot of processing power, eats up a lot of battery. So Apple has elected not to use or not to support Flash on any of their mobile devices. So that's why you won't see it coming on an iPad or an iPhone.
Okay. Yeah, it actually, there's some people too, I mean, this is just the political thing behind it. If you go back far enough, there was a time where, and I don't know the whole story, I'd have to look this all up, but this
Steve Jobs is listening, he can
call
us.
This should get you to the place where you type in the right stuff and find the whole story. But it actually starts way back with a thing that Adobe had with Apple back with TrueType fonts. There was a time where Apple had a set of fonts Adobe had this set of fonts. And
remember the old Adobe Type Manager?
Yeah, and they talk, and Steve Jobs came in and invested in like a third or something like that of these fonts. And then Microsoft came out with a thing called TrueType fonts, and TrueType fonts were a whole different platform of fonts. And Adobe went and grouped up with those guys too. So it caused a big falling out, and I may not have all my facts there straight, but that's kind of where the rift started with between Apple and Mac, and whether or not this is just an extension, not Apple and Mac, Apple and Adobe, whether or not this is an extension of that is hard to tell, but there's been
politically aside, Adobe Flash is proven to to be a huge memory and resource.
So you're saying I can get an iPad and I can see most of the websites and I may not see all the features, but
it's
not going to slow me down.
It won't.
I mean, iPads are great. They're light. They're very usable.
The thing is for me is I'll tell you, and I've talked, a lot of my clients have iPads and they love them, and I've talked to a lot of people who love them. To me, they're a little too big. If I want a tablet, a truly portable tablet, and that doesn't, it's not going to have a keyboard, and that's the key, you know, if you want a keyboard, you got to carry an extra device with the iPad. I really, really like the footprint of the new Galaxy Tab, which is kind of the biggest competitor right now to the iPad, but it's an Android tablet. It comes from, you can get it from Verizon or Sprint. I think AT&T too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got the 7-inch screen, which if you go down to Verizon or your Best Buy and compare the two, you're going to see a really nice difference in terms of the way, and talk about lightweight and portable, but still every bit as functional as the iPad. I think that I'm hoping that's what Apple's going to look at in the spring when they come out with their new one. And the rumors are they are going to come out with a smaller screen size for iPad 2. Because when you hold that iPad, if you hold it for any length of time, and especially if you're typing on it and you have to hold it with one hand, it's awfully heavy.
It's really heavy, yeah. Yeah, it's just a little bit better than holding a laptop in one hand. After a while, it's pretty heavy. But again, the iPad does so many things.
Right.
That don't,
it's a great device.
Yeah, don't consider my opinion to be me trying to talk you out of getting the iPad. I would just say seriously look at all of the other tablet devices that are out there right now and see if any of them will do what you want to do, because the advantage for the iPad really is the apps.
Right.
There's more apps available for iPad than for anything else, but it doesn't have a camera built in. It doesn't have, doesn't have an SD card slot. You can't use it with a lot of different accessories. There are some disadvantages too. And the weight to me is the big disadvantage. But it still wouldn't prevent me from getting one if the price was right and if I need it.
And I will say too, if you haven't bought yet.
Yeah, what you mentioned is kind of the same thing, at least what I've read, as far as getting an iPad to read books versus a Kindle or a Nook.
Right.
Yeah.
The weight.
Yep. And you might take a look at, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Only a little more price. Yeah.
I would say too is if you have, did you say you bought or you didn't buy yet? Did you buy one or not yet?
No, I haven't bought one.
Okay.
I've used them, and I...
Well, I would say, too, is if you haven't bought yet, The rumors in the last 2 or 3 weeks have just started proliferating about the new iPad 2. And everyone knows that Microsoft almost with like clockwork comes out with a new device every year, especially when it's a new item on their books, like the iPod Touch, then the iPhone, and now the iPad. They're going to have a release of a new device, the iPad 2, sometime in the spring, could be as early as February,
Yeah. More
than likely March, April. And if you can hold off, you're more than likely going to see a lot of the improvements that we're talking about, that a lot of people have talked about,
they always
come out with the next one.
Yeah, they almost always make a major announcement the very end of January or early February. So it's possible it could be out as early as that. But, you know, it is one of those things. Take a good look at the Barnes & Noble Nook Color. That might do everything that you want to do. It does. It lets you do apps. It lets you do a lot of other things. And it's lightweight. It's a smaller size. And it's even rootable since it runs on Android, so you can install lots of apps onto it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. That was helpful, guys.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
In other words, we don't have an answer. we have a perfect answer.
Well, we have an answer, but the answer is there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, there really is.
And that tablet market is really growing and changing, and the iPad certainly is a compelling device, but I just think for what it wants to do and what it does, it's a little too big.
Right.
I think if you get it a little smaller, then you're going to be a lot better off.
Exactly.
I think, personally.
I think if you have a desktop computer and you're looking for a in-between thing and you don't really need everything that a laptop does, the iPad might be worth looking at. However, I don't know if you've seen this, but now there's probably 4 or 5 cases on the market with keyboards
built in that
now turn your iPad into a laptop. And I think if you're going to go that route with it, you might as well get a laptop or a netbook or something like that. But the new MacBook Airs.
Right. And when you start adding those devices to, you know, they also came out with an SD attachment.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Then you are adding the weight.
Yeah.
So you might as well kind of think about all
yep.
that. Hey, I did get a sheet of paper here.
Oh, good.
From the folks here at KFM. And the official name of the fundraiser
yes.
is called What's Up.
W-A-T-T-S.
Watts up. Currently, they are 16 watts, and they want to boost it to 300 via the fundraiser.
Wow.
So that would stretch a lot further here, obviously. If we had, that would be doing a quick amount of math. That'd be about 20 times the power.
Yes.
So help KFM boost their power by a factor of 20 plus.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
That might get them to Patterson.
Hey, now. That'd
be pretty cool.
All right, so 241-8801, extension 1, 241-8801.
With my car stereo, at least. Zuckerberg.
Have you
heard the Zuck news?
Who's that guy?
Zuckerberg is one of the guys who made Airplane, the movie Airplane. No,
oh,
it's
okay.
The Zucker brothers. No, Zuckerberg is the founder of Facebook, which I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a site.
No?
It's like email.
Oh, okay.
Zuckerberg is Time Magazine's Person of the Year. So if you don't
really?
Know who Zuck is.
So they announced
I think that's a worthy Person of the Year, don't you?
I think so.
I think so. Certainly. I mean, the WikiLeaks stuff right now, I mean, it's too late for Assange to be part of it.
It was probably a toss-up between him and the makers of Farmville.
Oh, yeah. Zynga. Well, you know, I figured this is... They probably said, well, let's get Zuck. He bought Zynga. You know, that way we've got everybody. So, yeah, no, congratulations to... Zuckerberg, he's a big listener of the show, and we're glad to have him out there and have his support. So
yeah, and if he wants to call in and thank us for congratulating him, he can at 241-8801, extension 1.
Did you hear that the what's their name? The brothers who sued Facebook.
Oh, I don't remember their names.
What's their names? Moose or something. Anyway, yeah, it has a oos sound in it. Anyway, those brothers are now suing for Facebook again.
Again?
They're suing because they don't think they settled for enough money, basically. So now that Facebook is worth hundreds of billions, they think their $65 million was probably not enough.
Not enough.
They should have settled.
Oh, all right, here we answer.
All
phone.
Right, let's go to the phone. Hello, you're on with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Okay, I've got a question for you about the thing that's going on at the FCC, I think it is, where they're trying to, and I'm having a pack of loss between my brain and my mouth, about the, what they're trying to regulate the broadband, the
yes.
internet.
Yeah, are you talking about net neutrality? Is that
that's
the
it.
Buzzword?
That's it. Yeah. What is that? I don't quite get that.
You know what? I have lost track of what, I know there's been some developments in the last few weeks, but I'm kind of losing track of all of those. And I wish they'd call it something other than net neutrality, because it's hard for people to figure out what that means, even though it is fairly self-explanatory. But
well, I think the crux of it is that but as usual, when it gets up into actually passing a law, it proliferates into some grotesque anomaly that it wasn't in the beginning. But what the basis of net neutrality is that we all have to get internet from a provider. So whether it be your cable provider, your telephone provider, a wireless provider, and as it sits right now, for the most part, we all get the same speed. So, for example, if all three of us, you, I, and Adam, all have one internet provider, we all get the same speed. Now, with net neutrality hopes to try to preserve that. What the opposition wants to do is not have that. I always get this confused. Yeah, yes. I think the opposition wants to allow the provider that you and I and Adam have to say, okay, Adam is a power user. He uses more internet than you and I, so we're going to charge Adam a little bit more, and you and I will get a little bit less because he'll get priority because he's paying more. So in other words, if you pay a little bit more, or they consider you to have a little more importance, you will get priority in terms of speed and quality of your internet connection. Does that sound about right?
That's about right. It's a tiered service is what they're doing. And there's a lot of different ways of doing it. Some people think that, well, if you're watching movies all day, that uses a lot more data, so you should have to pay more. Other people are saying, well, schools shouldn't have to pay for their internet, so let's pick up the fee and make other people pay more, make companies pay more than what schools pay or what individuals pay. I mean, there's a lot of different ways of looking at it and a lot of different ways of dividing it up. But net neutrality, the word or the phrase, means the allowing the internet to be used
freely
by everybody the
and
same
evenly.
Way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The opponents to net neutrality are the people who say, well, you know, it's not fair that everybody gets the same thing when there's some people who use a whole lot more than others, and it's used in so many different ways. But when it all comes down to it, the thing I have read a lot about is whether or not there is a such thing as limited bandwidth. And that's like there's, you know, only so much water can go through the tubes of the internet. And that's a complete fallacy. There's more than enough pipes. There's more than enough bandwidth. Everything. I mean, it's all there. Accessing it and building the technology to utilize it is a different thing. So a lot of these cable companies see the net neutrality argument as a way of saying, well, let's charge more money so that we can use these pipes better, and get more communication flowing through them. But there's plenty of bandwidth out there. We're not in a limited bandwidth, and the internet doesn't slow down. We have more than enough ability to reach everybody, mm-hmm. even if we got every mobile phone and everything on there. But it is the common argument that you hear. And one of the big things, of course, it comes down to taxation and stuff like that that people are afraid of getting into.
Right, and I think the other thing, too, is the internet truly isn't controlled by any one government, and that's the beauty of it. It is an international utility, and so that's the other part of it, is how much can you control in your own country. And so there's a lot to go with it, and there has been some more hoopla in the news about it lately, but I have not read too much about it and have not kept up with it either.
Okay,
another question, though, it's kind of related. Do the DOCSIS levels affect your bandwidth, your transmission, like DOCSIS 1, DOCSIS 2, DOCSIS 3?
I'm not even aware what
that
is.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, like cable companies have, they go with DOCSIS 2.
Yeah, you know what? That's
never heard of.
We're
that.
Not geeks enough to even answer that.
I never heard of that. Yeah. That's probably something more relevant to the cable engineers. I don't know, from a technology standpoint, what that is or how that would affect you and I.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it. Love
All right. Take
Thanks.
Care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, if you have to get into tip and ring, we have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah,
maybe it is something, and I just am not familiar with it. But
I've never heard of Docks.
But you know what? I remember. Probably,
I buy Dockers.
Oh, yeah, Dockers.
I bought my first pair of Dockers online earlier this year.
And I've heard of DockX.
DocX, yeah.
Yeah, I know that. So there are a lot of geek things I know about. But I remember a call very similar to that. Before we pick on this guy too much, or before we say we don't...
No, we're not picking on him. We're picking on ourselves. Yeah, we don't know what we're doing.
We don't know everything, believe it or not. The funny thing is, I remember somebody called probably 10 years ago, no, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, and said, I want to know more about podcasts, and I'm thinking about doing podcasts. And I remember I remember telling this guy, we don't know what podcasts are. That's who. And now here we are doing them ourselves.
And Linux. So, Linux was another
Linux
thing.
Was another one. We used to pick on people like crazy about Linux. So.
And now we're Linux geeks.
Hello, you're on with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
I have a question.
Sure.
When I receive an email with a JPEG attachment, say a photograph,
okay,
and I open it up, and the photograph is there as intended. Down at the bottom, there's a toolbar, I guess you'd call it, and it has a forward, backward button, you know, your zoom, a rotate, delete, etc. If you click on the forward button numerous times, you get all kinds of images that had nothing to do with the email that was sent to you.
Yeah. Yes, I know what's causing this. That's here, and I think Rick does too. I just think he's kind of...
I've got a furrowed brow at the moment.
He has a furrowed brow, but here's what's happening. When you're opening up a picture in your email, it's opening up with the Windows picture viewing program, this little... What do they call that? I can't...
Fax viewer.
Yeah, the picture in fax viewer. What that does is it opens up, it downloads that picture into what's called the cache of your internet browser.
I got you.
So it kind of actually saves it in the computer in a place where it's going to delete
directory.
It later, kind of a temporary directory. So what's happening when you're hitting backwards and forwards, you're actually looking at the other pictures that are in the cache, which may be pictures from websites, maybe pictures from previous emails, things like that. It's actually a way that a lot of people discover that their family and friends have been looking at things they shouldn't on the computer. But that's a very common thing. And that's how I know about it, is I've helped several clients say...
That's how they caught that Denver Bronco coach.
Yeah. It's like, where did these dirty pictures come from? And when they they click on the forward and backward and they realize that, you know, somebody's been looking at stuff they shouldn't. And that's just the cache from the browser. You can clear that out in your web browser. Are you using Firefox, or which web browser are you using? Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Okay. In Internet Explorer, it's under...
Tools and Options.
Tools and Options.
And
or it's
history.
Under their little... Yeah. And just clear the history.
Or just download the CCleaner program. That's another good way to
That's
do it.
Actually probably what I'd recommend, is doing the CCleaner program, because I would catch all that stuff.
CCleaner.
Yeah, it's just called CCleaner, and if you go to helpmerick.com, you can find a link to it there.
Oh, okay.
And but it's a great program.
I was going to call someone who sent me an email and a picture that had nothing to do with anything and say, hey, I found this other stuff on here. I'm not sure you should.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I went to other JPEGs and we're getting repeats of it. And then I knew it had to be my computer.
Yep.
Huh. Good question.
And I don't know where the stuff came from.
No, it's only because we've seen it before. That's the only
really?
We know how it works. So, yeah, I don't know where it came from either. I mean, it's all somebody's browsing or some other email or something like that.
Well, and sometimes it's advertisements too.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you may not recognize it because it was the temporary picture
from an advertisement.
So it could have
come from an external source, not my browsing.
No, it's always from your browsing.
Always from your browsing, but it could be like the little side banners when you go visit a website, and it may have these little side banners like find singles in your neighborhood and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it can be those little side banner ads you see on some websites.
Or if you're on a site like a newspaper site and you're reading a particular article and you didn't scroll down and see everything on the page, those things are still in your browser cache somewhere behind the scenes. So it's there. It's all from your browsing or whoever's using that computer.
Well, nobody but me.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks.
Bye. Have a good day. 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. Yeah, I got lost in the email.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite get that he was clicking next on the photo. So
yeah.
That's
why.
Hey, but great questions today. But I do have to say, as much as I like my fellow man, we'd love to hear from the ladies.
Yes.
So 241-8801, extension 1. This isn't men's hour. It can be men's and women's hour. So give us a call here at KFM. Grand Junction, Colorado will answer your questions. But great questions so far today.
Absolutely. Now, one thing, too, I thought maybe we should talk about is...
You got to check your Twitter in case somebody Twittered you at Talking Digital.
I have been buzzed.
Oh, you so get a buzz alert?
I get a buzz if people do an at reply or whatever.
All right.
What was I going to say? Oh, I think we should also talk really quick about the new show. that we're doing.
Sure. Yeah,
because
KFM.
We definitely need to let people know that you can hear us now twice a month.
Here on KFM. Yeah, starting last week, you can now hear Adam and I on the second Wednesday. We're going to put an actual schedule on our website because now it gets kind of crazy.
It gets funky.
But on the second Wednesday of every month here on KFM, you can listen to us from 5:30 to 6:30 in the evening, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., doing the same thing. We're going to talk about technology. Yep. We're going to answer your questions. We'll take live calls. We'll take Twitter questions, that kind of thing. And as we've been doing for now, this is our third year. In fact, this is our third year anniversary today. Is our third year anniversary here at KFM, where we've done a monthly show every third Wednesday of the month from noon to one, which you're listening to at the moment.
Right.
So twice a month, second Wednesday, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the p.m. And I can't get Adam out of bed that early at a.m.
Right.
And then on third Wednesday, noon to one.
Right.
Good.
And
good.
Then we
Glad
do a podcast every week on helpmerick.com. So we are out there.
We're everywhere.
All over.
If you look for us, we're everywhere.
Yep.
All right. 241-8801, extension 1. Now, before we took that call, we were talking about, well, we I guess we were talking
about Zuck.
Yeah, we're talking about Zuck. Was there another item that we had there or no?
Let me check here.
Were you looking at anything else?
I was actually looking at Twitter's top 10 most retweeted people.
Okay.
But,
and who is that?
Well, here.
Is Rainn Wilson one of them?
You know what? That's a good question. I'm trying to. They don't have it listed. It's like written in paragraph form.
Ah.
So,
I don't like reading paragraphs.
I know.
It's got to be a list. It's not a list.
List. Lady Gaga, believe it or not, is on the list. Oh. Joe Jonas is on the list.
Oh.
Kanye West is on the list. Taylor Lautner.
Who's Taylor Lautner?
I don't know.
I'll just say
Kanye wimp, a wimp. Rihanna. We are the world's most boring nation.
Wow.
Yeah.
The
Lil Wayne.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that all these people were using Twitter,
Justin
all these music
Bieber.
People.
Justin Bieber is on there, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
That's Colbert. Colbert is the only one on there worth following.
Mentioning.
Yeah, Colbert. In fact,
not that I'm against those other
everybody
artists,
on The Daily Show.
Come on.
Or on that Comedy Central team
political
of shows.
Area, yeah.
Yeah, because you've got, who's the other guy?
Jon Stewart.
Jon Stewart, but the other, Hodgman.
Oh, John Hodgman's
good. Got to read, if you follow Twitter, John Hodgman's amazing. Definitely worth following.
I like when he tweets when he's playing Scrabble.
Oh man, he's crazy. He's amazing. But John Hodgman's great, and so anyway,
I don't follow Colbert. I should follow Colbert. Do you follow Colbert?
Yeah, I do. But you know what? I follow so many people that I don't ever go looking for anybody. I just say what's on my front page of my Twitter stream, and that's all I look at. So
you follow a lot of people, though.
I call about 1,000 people.
Yeah, see, I'm only still about a couple hundred.
Yeah, and I need to divide mine into lists and drop some of them and just make lists, but I haven't done that. It's Twitter maintenance for me is not on my highest priority list. So,
now, speaking of that, on the way over here, I was wondering, because we always give out our Twitter address, and we do get a few tweets every now and again, if at Mac Texan or Kettlewell or Wild Blue Bug or one of those folks are listening, they'll tweet us a question here and there. But I was thinking on the way over here, I'm gonna throw out a number, and I'm gonna say that of all the folks on the internet, close to 100% of those folks on the internet are using email. Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
I mean, don't you think
I would
almost
say so.
Everyone
I would
that
say
has
so. Yes.
I'm wondering what the percentage of people who have internet are using Twitter.
Oh, it's under 1%.
You think it's under 1%?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think
One less than one out of less than one out of 100.
Under, certainly.
Probably less one out of 1,000. Probably less than one out of 1,000.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 0.01%.
Yeah,
it's not a lot of people, and I also think people who know how to use it is even smaller than that. I think there's a lot of people with Twitter accounts.
Well, based on those top 10 retweets, that makes me feel even worse about Twitter.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, really, I think it's a great tool when you use it right, but I think it's. Days are numbered.
I'm wondering if Twitter folks around the world use it like we do here in the Valley, where you start to get a little Twitter community.
Right.
That kind of works with each other.
I think that's certainly the case. I know Foursquare is that way. Now, see, Foursquare is like Twitter with location in it. So when you show up at a place.
Any venue.
Any venue. Or landmark or whatever. You go
you
there.
You could be mayor of KFM.
I could be. In fact, I should do that right now. you can check in to this venue, and one of the neat things is you can find out who else is in that venue at that time. So if you go to a concert, you can see who's there, and you know, stuff like that. But it's only if you check in. But I do like to do it in town because there are things I learn about a business from Foursquare. So when you go in and you check in, you can say, you know, there's an option there to leave a comment about this place, and sometimes people will say, you know, ask them
best tacos ever.
Yeah, ask them for the native menu or something like that, and you'll find out stuff about these restaurants that
you didn't know or unadvertised.
Yeah, the mall or wherever. And,
probably if you check into McDonald's, it probably says the coffee's hot.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it's kind of like geocaching, but you know, where you go into a place and you find
easier
little things. A whole lot easier than geocaching. A whole lot easier.
I like geocaching better than Foursquare.
Yeah, me too. I'm not a big Foursquare guy. In fact, I only use it when I'm sitting there and I'm thinking,
I haven't done that
there's
yet.
There's got to be something I've...
You should do it right now KAFM.
I'm going to check in right now at KAFM.
Now, do you use the location portion of Facebook?
No.
Speaking of Zuckerberg.
No, because I don't even post my Foursquare to anything else.
Oh, you do it just
for...
I've seen you on Twitter every now and then.
I've dropped it. I quit doing it. So now the only way to know where I'm at on Foursquare is you're following me on Foursquare.
Gotcha.
I don't bother doing it anywhere else because, really, I don't want all my Facebook people to know. I don't want all my Twitter people to know.
Well, that's the thing. These location-based services, you know, I kind of worry about it a little bit because it says if you're checking in here, and when you check in...
That means
there's
not someplace else.
That's right. And it's a GPS location.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have somebody looking for you, like let's say, for example, the IRS, and they're following you on Foursquare, they could find you at a precise point.
No, you're absolutely right.
And there are folks that are really very, very anal about Foursquaring everywhere they are during the day. And you could actually build a profile of someone and say, hey, they go to Durango Bagel every day. And although we don't have Durango Bagel in town anymore.
I know what you mean.
But, you know, then you could follow them around. That's a little scary to me. I think you got to be careful when you're doing those location-based services.
In fact, when we went on a little short family vacation the other day, a while back, just a few days. But at that time, I told my kids, don't say
where we're all doing.
Or I don't care, you know, you can do stuff like that, but don't say, oh, the whole family's going to Denver. And don't, you know, you kind of have to watch out like that because I don't know who their friends are.
Right.
I know who my friends are. And, you know, we were all real careful about what we...
Well, this day and age, criminals are high tech. Let's talk about that for a second. I've not got on my monthly soapbox about viruses and spyware.
Sure.
But that all results. In fact, I had a client yesterday ask me, why do they do this? And it's all about money. It's all about money. Don't kid yourself that it's fun or it's a pimply-faced kid in the bottom of his mom's basement drinking Jolt and doing these viruses. This is organized crime doing this. And it's only a matter of time. In fact, it probably happens right now that organized crime says, hey, we'll start following these people or monitoring these places. And we'll say, hey, this person's not home in this particular neighborhood because they just checked in at Saks Fifth Avenue in New York City. Well, that gives them an open invitation to visit your home that's got an address on Facebook that's accurate.
Yep.
And that's why I just don't like posting really personal information.
Right.
My birthday is not posted anywhere.
Yeah.
One of our friends there on Twitter had a birthday a couple weeks ago.
And
my birthday moves.
Oh, that's great.
Every time it gets close to the birthday, I always move it about 4 or 5 months in advance or 2 months behind.
Yeah.
So then that way I don't get people saying, oh, happy birthday, from people I don't even know.
Yeah.
If you know who I am, you know when my birthday is.
Right.
And that's the only people I care to know. That I want to know who my birthday is.
Yep.
But I don't need to have thousands of people on Facebook that I have no clue who they are saying happy birthday.
Every person should go into Facebook right now, if you're on Facebook.
I'm going right now.
Go into your settings, into your privacy settings, and really spend an hour tweaking that.
An hour?
Yeah. I'm not saying it'll take an hour.
Oh, okay.
What I'm saying is go through it. Don't go, don't want everybody to. Oh, I don't want you know, just go through there and say, because there are settings, you can really fine tune that.
Right.
And say, I want my friends of friends to
be able
see
to my
see
my photos.
Yeah. So in other words, if you take pictures and you're a photographer and you want everybody to see those pictures, you can make them completely public.
Right.
But you can also
friends.
You can also make a group on Facebook called Family, and you can go in and say, I only want family to be able to see this particular album.
Okay.
And you can really tweak them. And that's why I say spend an hour doing it. I'm just saying, you know, really think about how you're doing it, because
You don't want everything out there.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll go through, you know, I'm on Facebook and start, and I made a group on Facebook for my class that I teach at the college. And I did that because I don't want to my students to all feel compelled or feel obligated to friend me on Facebook or anything like that. And but there are some that, you know, I have worked with in the past or whatever that I am friends with. But I still made this group. And the nice part about joining a group or becoming a fan versus becoming a friend is I can't see all of their information unless it's available for everybody to see. So
it becomes more like a bulletin board.
Yeah, it's much more of a bulletin board. There's a lot more privacy. I can see their names and I can see the stuff that they want to be public, but I can't see anything else. And I feel a lot more comfortable with that. And
then
I tell
not,
them that.
They're
I
not say, seeing your fifth grader's chorus
exactly.
video. Because
they
something.
Don't want to friend me on Facebook. But but Facebook is such a great platform for me to send out an announcement to everybody. So it's
okay, let me ask you this. We were talking about percentages earlier. Adam is a professor here at our local college. In your classes, now you've been teaching 3 years?
Yeah.
About 3 years? And now I want you to look back in the last 3 years, out of all your students, how many of them are on Facebook, percentage-wise?
Usually it's right at 50%.
Really?
There's a lot of kids
I'm
who aren't on Facebook. Yeah. It's growing. Every
at
time
a college
I,
level, I'm surprised.
Yeah, every time I teach the class, it's bigger. A couple of years ago when I taught it, two people in a class of 21 were on Facebook.
That's interesting.
Now we're
especially since it started as a college-only service.
Right, and now we've kind of crossed over that 50%. But I think a lot of them, when I first started, a lot of them were saying that's like MySpace for old people. Now Facebook is Facebook. So.
Yeah. Does MySpace still exist?
Yeah, it does still exist.
But
in fact,
does it still really exist?
Did you
do
hear about the mashup this week? About 2 weeks ago, I guess. Facebook...
Adam and I are on MySpace.
MySpace and Facebook somehow they have this thing called Mashup, where now you can post to
dual
MySpace
post?
From Facebook and vice versa,
brother.
So that you can use the service because MySpace is still trying to be a media company. If you go to MySpace now, you won't even recognize it. It doesn't have the unicorns and rainbows and glitter.
Oh, it doesn't.
Yeah, they've changed it quite a bit there.
Still has tons of ads, I'll bet.
Yeah, I mean, more than Facebook, for sure, but it is changed in platform because they're really trying to bring people there for media, and, usually when you search for a song, a lot of times you find that song linked
a lot of
up
artists
through,
will
through
have
MySpace.
Yeah.
So I think MySpace has a place.
Rihanna probably has a MySpace.
Yes, I'm sure. And Bieber, yeah. But I think that there's a place for it, but I think the best way to use it is if you know, another company bought it and used it for the music side. Not
do you? I think. Well, it's right now. It's underneath the what's his name?
Murdoch.
Fox News Murdoch guy. Mm-hmm. So that's who owns MySpace at the moment. I wonder if Facebook will ever say, "Hey, Murdoch."
I don't think so. I don't think
we'll
Facebook
make you an offer.
I think Facebook could just say, "You know what? We're going to open up Facebook Music."
It's irrelevant.
Boom,
yeah,
you're gone. Yeah. So I think they could
that
if they wanted, but I don't think they want to. I think AOL buying MySpace would be a potential possibility.
That's a good marriage.
See, it would be good there because, AOL is getting into the news business and content business. So, they've bought Engadget. They've bought, what's the other one? The other gadget blog.
Oh, they bought both of them?
Yeah,
the other
they have
one
both
is,
of them. And then they also have TechCrunch.
Really?
You know, they buy
a lot of stuff.
Oh, I did
see they bought TechCrunch.
So I can see AOL being a part of MySpace down the road for
now,
sure.
I will say since you brought up the AOL, that for our AOL listeners out there, if you're still using the AOL software or if you're an MSN user and you're still clicking on the butterfly, both of those companies, Microsoft and AOL, are trying to get you out of that platform.
Yes.
Those are programs that were built in the 90s and have been just basically cobbled together to make it this far into the future. And they really aren't made for the future. They really want you to use Firefox or Google Chrome or Internet Explorer and go to MSN.com or AOL.com and browse the web and do your email that way.
Right.
Because they're really not putting a lot of development into either those proprietary browsers.
No.
So,
and in fact, once they break and they don't work, there's no way of getting them fixed to make them work again. You're not going to find tech support. You're not going to. It's going to be a real pain.
And I know it's familiar. I know you're used to it, and you love to hear the guy say you've got mail, but he still does that, even on the web-based system.
Now, do you still see CompuServe people once in a while?
Every now and
again. Like a year ago, within the last year, maybe?
Maybe once.
It amazes me that I still, you know.
And that was really the first true public internet before the internet was internet.
Right before I sold my business, I saw a CompuServe customer, and I quickly got them over to Chrome. And they were happy, actually, which usually didn't happen. Usually they kind of lost, but no, they were very happy to go to Chrome and Gmail. So.
CompuServe was like Facebook was even, before Zuckerberg was probably even born.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. We're here for about another 15 minutes. If you have any tech, I didn't mean to scare away the guys by opening up the lines for the girls.
Oh, yeah, guys can call too, sure.
But it was just interesting that we had four or five guys in a row call and no women. So 24, and I know that the women have as many questions as the guys do, but don't be afraid to ask your question. One of the things people tell Adam and I is that they're afraid to ask their question because they think it's not an intelligent question. And there is no such thing as a question that is not intelligent, because that means to me, if you ask questions, I'm a big question guy. I love to ask questions because that's how I learn. And that's what we want you to feel comfortable doing, is asking your question in this very private and easygoing environment. Just kind of imagine yourself laying on a very comfortable couch in a dark room, and it's just you and I and Adam. We'll answer your question very, very gently.
Where it's like,
it's about those cable docks.
Yeah, we don't want to know
anything
about
those. Whatever
that was. Yeah. Here's something interesting. This is from Boy Genius Report, which is one of the best blogs out there. It's like Engadget. Mm-hmm. Or not.
Is he the Apple
what's
guy?
What's the other one?
I'll think about it.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I wish I could think of it. The Gawker, the other Gawker one, the one that got in trouble for leaking the iPhone. That's what I'm trying to think of.
I know who you're talking about.
Hello, you are on with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Good afternoon. Enjoying your program.
Thank you.
I just have a question. What's the difference between Linux Mint and Linux 10.4, I think?
And Ubuntu?
Ubuntu 10.10 or whatever.
Really, the difference is that Ubuntu is probably the most popular, at the moment, the most popular Linux distribution. They call it distribution. Ubuntu is a customized version of Linux, the most popular out there. Linux Mint is a more customized version of Ubuntu. So they're really about the same thing, but Linux Mint allows you to put it on your computer. It's got Ubuntu as the underpinnings, but it adds on a lot of the extras that, because Ubuntu stays very, very free, in other words, they don't use any software in the main installation of Ubuntu that would have anything to do with a commercial company, you have to go download things like Flash and Java and Adobe Reader and some of those kinds of things to be able to increase the functionality of Ubuntu. Linux Mint throws all that in for you right on the initial install. So in other words, if you like Ubuntu, Linux Mint will just get you there a little faster.
Ah, I see. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.
I like using Linux Mint because of that reason.
It comes with everything.
Yeah, install it comes with everything. Plus, I guess the other thing that's nice about it is for people converting from Windows, instead of having two toolbars, which the Ubuntu does out of the box, they make it a much more Windows-like experience with just one toolbar, one taskbar, and a little menu system to find your programs.
Right.
Makes it real nice.
Yeah. Well, what I was getting at, the other blog was Gizmodo.
Gizmodo.
That's what I was thinking of. So Boy Genius Report, in some ways, is like Gizmodo. Gizmodo is all, well, Engadget does to some degree too, but Gizmodo likes to leak stuff. They like to put out pictures of devices before anybody else does and things like that. And Boy Genius Report does a lot of the same stuff.
Now, Boy Genius has been primarily an Apple guy, though, right?
He's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
He has a lot of Apple stuff on there, but he certainly has Android.
He's across the board.
Stuff too. Yeah, it's just geek stuff.
But did he start out as Apple only?
You know what, that I don't know. The history of it at all. But anyway, he points out a few interesting things on here. He talks about Verizon is going to kick off CES this year.
Really?
Verizon CES.
With LTE, is that the...
Well, maybe, but LTE's already been announced and rolled out.
That's
true. So he's got a few things in here Of course, this is all rumor.
About the iPhone?
The iPhone, The iPhone.
The however, Verizon iPhone rumor.
The rumors are starting to get so specific. It's kind of like the iPad 2,
yeah.
Where after a while you start hearing the same rumor from so many different places. It kind of like
is it all from the same seed, though?
See, I don't know. Well, usually it's a lot of times it's through these Chinese companies that are putting the thing together. Do you remember probably 6 months before the new iPod Nano came out, they released pictures of a small touch screen that they said, we don't know how Apple is doing this, but here's Apple's logo on it and everything like that. Well, the same sort of stuff is starting to leak out with Verizon and with an iPhone.
So what do you think? What do you think the chances of iPhone coming out on Verizon?
On CES, I don't know. I mean, that's hard to tell, but they're saying it might be announced by Steve Jobs at CES, which would be interesting.
That'd be very interesting.
But here's the other thing is they're trying to put this chipset together, and this is all but confirmed, but they're trying to put a chipset together that will be an embedded CDMA / GSM
programmable
chip, so it could do either one. And it'd make it kind of a world phone and all of that too. But it's programmable, so it means that you couldn't just pull the chip out and put it in another phone. It would be with the phone you chose. But it is something that they announced during the WWDC that they were working on that. That's the Worldwide Developer Conference that Apple puts on every year.
And what Adam is talking about on the CDMA GSM thing is two different standards of cellular technology.
Yeah, if you have a friend, if you use AT&T or
T-Mobile,
you'll know that you just pull a little chip out and you can buy any phone you want and put that little chip in
and then use
the phone. If you're on Sprint or Verizon, then you have to buy a whole new phone and there's no chip that carries your phone number. Right. You have to have them program it and everything. Well, this new system that Apple wants to do is kind of a hybrid. Hello, you're on with Rick and Adam on
KFM.
What can we do for you?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I had a question for you.
Yes.
We've been with one internet provider for such a long time and have our email set up with them. We're interested in trying to change to a different, internet provider or email service. Is there any easy way to go about changing all your email accounts with all your banking, all your bill paying?
There's not an easy way, but what I would recommend is that you start early. When are you going to change over your services?
Well, we don't know. Probably within the next month or so.
So the phone call hasn't been made yet. So you're really good. I was thinking maybe you'd called them and they'd given you a deadline for a week from now.
No.
I would start right now and go in and set up a Gmail account or several. You know, have everybody set up a Gmail account, but set up Gmail accounts and then get that going. Once you have that going, you can start using those Gmail accounts and then go to each one of the places. And after you do it two or three times, you're going to notice a pattern that most places have you change the information in the same thing where you just log in and you say, change my profile, and you change the email address. But get that going now because, you know, that gives you a whole 2 or 3 or 4 weeks to
make
get that all switched over to make sure that everybody has that information. You can keep watching your other email account, and then as stuff comes through, you can notify the people that you want that you've changed email addresses.
And that's key right there, the people that you want. This is your opportunity to start fresh and just don't give people the new address that you don't want to have contact with.
I can't hear the other mic back there.
Oh, I said that also gives you the opportunity to give the new address just to the people that you want to, and you don't have to give the new address to people you don't want to, and it's your opportunity to start clean.
And it's even a good time too, if you haven't done this already, set up at least two email accounts and give one to your
closest friends.
To your closest friends who don't send you jokes, who don't send you email forwards, you know, just your close friends.
Clean friends.
Yep. Send that,
clean
give them
email.
That email address, and then make another one that you're going to use for things that are, you know,
less
correspondence
important.
With, that you use for Facebook and that you use for
your second Uncle Jim who likes to forward about 90 messages a day.
Yeah. Okay. Or when you register to win the car at the mall, you know, things like that.
Right. All right. Very good.
Sure.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was some easy way to do a blanket.
There's not an easy way, but you're in a good spot because you have plenty of time to start getting work, getting it going. And we have a lot of people who say, you know, I called the company and they're coming on Tuesday, and how do I get all this stuff switched over? that's when you have to work pretty quickly and it'd be kind of rough. But you've got plenty of time to go in and do it. Start with the most important stuff first, your banks and all of that, yeah. And then work down. And you'll remember stuff like magazine subscriptions or whatever that you might need to go in and change. But you have plenty of time to do it.
Your recommendation would be to leave it with the Gmail account.
Absolutely.
Long term?
Yeah, your question actually brings up a very good reason why I never recommend using your internet provider's email. Because when you're in your situation where you do want to change, or maybe you move out of the city or something like that, and we all do that, you are going to have to go through what you're going through. But if you have a Gmail or a Yahoo address, you have a permanent email that's going to follow you no matter where you go. So I never recommend that anyone uses their internet provider's email for anything that they want to be a permanent email.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, very good.
All right.
Thank you for your help.
Appreciate the call.
You bet.
Yeah, that's a prime example right there of why I recommend that no one uses their internet provider's email.
Like Bresnan.net or Quest.net or
right.
Whatever.
MSN, even MSN, because yeah. If you're paying for MSN, it's very difficult to switch that over to a free Hotmail.
Right.
So it's...
Well, you keep it. You keep
can
it
you?
Now. Yeah, now they keep it.
Even
now you just go to Hotmail.com and you log in with your MSN.
Even if you're no longer paying for it?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's good to know. All right, one more last question here. Welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs with Rick and Adam. How can we help you?
Hi, I have a question
about
Microsoft Work.
We're excited because you're the first woman who called today.
Yeah, so
all right, about Microsoft Word.
Yeah, what about it?
Yes, when I scan something into my computer,
yeah,
and or like my computer email, and then send a copy of it to myself, Microsoft Works will not open it anymore. It just started maybe a week ago.
So we got to back up here again. You're scanning a document into your computer, and you're inserting it into a Microsoft Works document?
Yes.
Now explain your process again, because we got to be clear on what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish here. So you have, let's say, a bill or something that you want to scan on your scanner. Explain to us what you're doing.
When I scan it to my email.
Okay.
And attach it, and then I was sending it to somebody else and a copy to myself.
I see. Okay, so you're scanning a document and into an email. I got you. Now, does your scanner convert it to a PDF file, or what type of file does it convert it, or just a JPEG, or what does it convert it to?
JPEG.
Ah, okay. And so then you mentioned that your Microsoft Works is not opening it.
Correct. It says Works cannot open.
And it can't. Yeah, Works.
Temporary internet files. The file may be in use by another application. The file format may not be supported by any of the installed converters, or the file may be corrupt.
Yeah. See, what's happening is Microsoft Works will not open that and shouldn't be opening that. I think what's gone on, if you're trying to open a JPEG, Works isn't the tool to open it. What you're going to need to do is close out of all your programs. And are you using Windows XP, or what version of Windows?
Vista.
Vista. Okay, so you're going to close all your programs, and then you're going to go to your My Pictures folder.
Now, before you go on, just real quick, I just want to insert into here.
Yes.
Before you start writing notes and all of that, that all of this information is on helpmerick.com.
Right.
If you search for open with.
Right.
The words open with. So anyway, I want Rick to continue, but I wanted to insert that there.
Because it's a fair amount of steps.
Seriously trying to write all these things down. It is on Help Me Rick, and I believe the tip is called something like conquering the open with problem or something like that.
Something like that. But yeah, what's happened in your case is that the JPEG file format has somehow gotten associated with Microsoft Works, which is not supposed to happen. Microsoft Works is just only there to open up documents that are created in it, or databases or spreadsheets. So what you need to do is close all your programs. You're going to go to My Pictures. You're going to right-click on any picture. It doesn't matter which one. Just right-click on any photo. And then you're going to find an option that says Open With. That's why Adam mentioned Open With. And then you're going to choose, there's going to be an option off to the side that says Choose Program. And you're going to click Choose Program. And then you're going to get a list of options. And what you want to use with Windows Vista is the Microsoft Picture Viewer option. And then there's one last step at the very bottom of this. After you choose that program, you're going to check a box that says always use this program. And by doing that, then when you go into your email and you get those JPEG attachments, they're going to open up the way they're supposed to.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay, well, great.
And I hope that's not too confusing, but that's what's happened in your case, is that the JPEG is misassociated, and you just need to reassociate it with the right item on your computer.
Okay, well, great. Yeah, because it always worked before, and it just started like a week ago.
Yeah, try that, and you should be in good shape.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
I cut her off. Sorry. We're glad to have you on. Hello, you're on.
One last question.
Adam, we got time for a couple seconds. What can we do for
you? Okay. For Adam, I guess the digital cameras, you know, you go out and buy your cards, and now they've got the schedule 4 and 6 and 10 type SD cards.
Right.
Does it make much difference?
Nope. Let me ask you,
would it apply?
How do you use your camera? Are you just a casual shooter, or do you go out and shoot sports?
A little bit of everything, I guess.
Okay.
So for general use, I guess.
Yeah, the higher the number, the faster that the camera will write to that card. However, cameras and the media and everything are so fast now that you're not going to have to wait a long time. Most of these cameras have a cache in them that saves the picture inside the camera until it can be written to the card, so you can keep shooting. So it's not critical, but the higher the number, the faster the media writes to the card. And it's not going to be that big of a difference.
So is a 4 plenty good?
Yeah, four or six, either one of those.
And if you don't have a newer camera, you can't take advantage of the newer speeds
anyway.
Yeah,
there are some. If it says SDHC on the card, then you have to have a camera that supports SDHC memory.
Right.
So, but as long as you have an SDHC camera, then you can use any memory you want. You probably won't notice any big difference. The image quality is going to be the same on anything. It just has to do with how fast that.
How about when you're using a video application on your camera?
Yeah, it depends on your camera. Some smaller cameras or cheaper cameras, it might make a difference. Newer cameras have a good enough buffer built into them to where they, you don't have to worry too much about it. But if you have an older camera or a less expensive camera, maybe $100 Nikon or something like that, then you might want to get a faster memory for it.
Okay, great. Thank
you. Okay. You all right? Thank you.
All right. We are out of time for this month of
our...
to
do it. We got people trying to call through, but we had lots of time for them to do so.
Yeah, darn it. Well, we will be back again next month on the second Wednesday from 5:30 to 6:30 here on KFM, and on the third Wednesday from noon to 1. Thanks for listening, and have a great day and a great holiday season.